Parsha Power for Parshas Shoftim, and I would be in Yeshiva, but I am in Staten Island, where my father is sitting Shiva for the loss of my grandfather. So Parsha Power this week should be a Schus Liulei Nishmas, my grandfather, Moshe Ben Yosef. And with that, we will go right into Parshas Shoftim. And in so doing, there's a lot to get to. A lot to get to for Parshas Shoftim, so we're going to try to get everything. I asked a handful of questions in the Parsha preview. And in just in terms of segueing right into Shoftim from Parshas Re'eh, so we said that Devarim in general and Parshas Devarim was an overview, the story of the beginning of the Gullus that was the traveling through the Midbar. Those are the stories that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke about. V'eschanan was an inside review of the Bris and how the Bris of Matan Torah would be relevant to Klal Yisrael as they would go into Eretz Yisrael. Part 3 was Akev, where Moshe Rabbeinu teaches Klal Yisrael the consequences of its actions using history and hindsight as the backdrop. And Re'eh, which was last week's parsha, we said was preparing for the new covenant, which would take place at Har Ebal and Har Gerizim. It would be elaborated on for the first time in Parshas Kisavo. It was referenced last week. And one of the questions that we were addressing last week was why we would introduce the bris at Har Ebal and Har Gerizim, the bracha and the klala, if that wasn't going to be the next thing that the Chumash was going to talk about. Because from there, the Chumash spoke about a bunch of different laws in Re'eh, and then Shoftim now, it's going to be a bunch of laws. Kiseitze is going to be a bunch of laws. And then Kisavo, finally, we're going to come back to the bracha and the klala. So why is it like that? So I had an approach, and I heard last week, I was in Englewood, and I heard Rabbi Popko, and he was quoting an Alshech. And the Alshech had an answer that I think my answer was similar to. I didn't suggest this answer last week, but basically the idea was that the more fundamental bracha in the klala is really the expression of your avodas Hashem, meaning what you do in terms of Ratzon Hashem. The action itself is the bracha, the opportunity, the mitzvah opportunity. And even though, yes, there might be, you know, consequences and reward and punishment for the things that you do, but more than anything else, we like Mordechai Shapiro says, and really what Pirkei Avos had said before, is that schar mitzvah, that the bracha of the mitzvah is the mitzvah itself, which is which kind of leads us into Parsha Shoftim, which is a lot of mitzvos, and Kiseitze, which is going to be a lot of mitzvos. The idea is that these are fundamental parts, these are components of the bracha itself, if not the essential bracha itself. Just in terms of what Shoftim is in a more general way as well. In addition, there are going to be a lot of laws that are very relevant to Eretz Yisrael, or at least to the time when the Bnei Yisrael go into Eretz Yisrael, a lot of the laws of Shoftim are going to be relevant. So that's one thing to think about when going into Shoftim. In terms of the global theme for Shoftim, I would continue to suggest that, and this is what I said in the Parsha preview, that there are a couple of themes in Shoftim. Among the themes in Shoftim, we have a lot of the institution of a lot of authority figures, leaders in Klal Yisrael. That's one of the apparent themes. You see a lot of different leaders, from the Melech, to the Kohanim, to the Shoftim and the Shotrim, the Kohen Meshach Melchama, the Nevi'im. There are a lot of leaders that are referenced in Shoftim. And in addition to that, the latter half of Shoftim is all devoted to the halachos of milchama, the halachos of war. So we have the series of different authority figures, and then we have the series of laws pertaining to war. So those are a lot of what's discussed in this week's Parsha. I would also point out that the war series that comes up at the latter half of Shoftim seems to be continued in the beginning of Kiseitze. The war series in Shoftim starts off with Kiseitze al-Machoma al-Oyevecha. It starts off saying that when you go out to war against your enemy, and it says Vera Isa, and you're going to see, it says you're going to see Sus Varechev Amrav Mimcha Lo Sira Mehen. It says you're going to go to war against enemy, and you're going to see the horse and the chariot and a mighty nation. So that's how the war series in Shoftim begins. If you look at Kiseitze in the beginning, the lashon is almost exactly the same. It says Kiseitze la mechama al oyevecha. Then it continues to say, and then it goes into Vera'isa Bashivi. You're going to see among the captives, Eshesifas Toar. Now, one of the questions that I addressed or that I mentioned in the Parsha preview was why, in fact, is Kisetse a new Parsha if it seems to be a continuation of the war series? And the only spoiler I will give you right now is that I'm not going to answer it now. I'm going to answer that question next week, hopefully, Meretz Hashem. But something to think about is that this pasuk, again, both sections begin with Kisetze Amachama Aliyevecha, and there's something that you see. You're looking at something. In the beginning of the war series, you're looking at the horses and the chariots and the nation. Here, you're looking into the captives and you're looking at the Eshes Sifas Toar. Is there a connection? Is there some particular contrast that's being hinted to here, which would clue us into why Kisetze is its own parsha? Find out next week. In the meantime, we will address some of the questions that we asked about the war series in the Parsha preview, and I will reference this question soon. So just to, again, think about what the global theme of Shoftim is, what we're looking for. We're looking for laws that are relevant to Klal Yisrael's entry into Eretz Yisrael, focusing on authority figures. Not only authority figures, but you'll see that there's apparently a contrast that's drawn within the authority figures. There's, like that, it's teaching us to discern between the leaders of the establishment and the rebels who are anti-establishment. And I'll elaborate on that as we continue. Okay. Now, let's go into the... We'll now go into the segments of Parshas Shoftim. Just one second. I'm in my notes. I want to copy and cut something. Okay, and with that, we will go right into the Parsha. Okay. So in terms of the segments, Shoftim is a very packed and loaded Parsha, and for that reason, I have no fewer than 14 sections. That might be a record. And if it is a record, just get ready for Kisetze. Kisetze might be longer. We had a lot for Mishpatim as well. We had a lot for Kedoshim. So we have a lot to discuss for Shoftim. Mirt Hashem, we will get to it all. So what are the sections of Shoftim? Shoftim begins. We have the institution of Shoftim and Shotrim. Then we have a few psukim that make up their own little paragraph. Very strange, we have to discuss this, but it talks about, I refer to this section after, so section number one is Shoftim and Shotrim, section number two, I refer to it as insults to the Avodah. And this would, and like how I came to this, you'll see in a second. The section talks about Asheros, which we can translate as idolatries. We have putting a matzeva next to the we have making a matzeva of avodah zarah, and we have bringing on a mizbeach as an offering an animal that has a mum or an animal that was offered in a way that fulfills the discredit of pigle, which is obviously a kind of carbon that is not acceptable to Hashem. So The simple question, which I already addressed in naming the title of the section, is what do these little halachos have to do with each other? Putting an asherah next to the mizbeach, or erecting a matzeva, or making a karban that's a toavas Hashem, as the pasuk says, that it either has a mum or it's pigle. And the answer is all these things are really insults to the avodah, to think that you can plant an asherah on the ground next to the mizbeach. Obviously, Hashem's not going to like that. And when it comes to making a matzeva, you might say, I'm going to make a matzeva in service of Hashem. The pasuk explicitly says, "V'losakim l'cha matzeva, asher sanei Hashem elokecha." Hashem hates it. Hashem hates the matzeva. Don't put up the matzeva. And of course, don't offer Hashem an animal that he's not going to like. These things are absurd. They are services that are doing a disservice. So that makes them counterintuitive. That makes them counterproductive. So we have these, section two is, again, what I refer to as insults to the Avodah. This is what they have in common. They are all insults to the Avodah. What we have to explain, though, is why section two is inserted and shtupped in between section one and section three. Because section one is talking about the Shoftim and the Shotrim. Section three continues the discussion of the general rules of court. It has a particular focus on prosecuting an idolater in a court of Jewish law. But the it seems to be a continuation of the halachos of the court. So by Shotam Shotram, it talks about how they Tzadik Tzadik Tirdo from Lo Sakir Panim, they shouldn't have favoritism, no accepting a shochad, no accepting bribery. Then after the section containing the insults to the avoda, so then the Chumash says that if you find Kimatzi b'chad sherecha, if you find somewhere among your among your domain that you that there's a person who's doing evil, and the Chumash itself elaborates that you're doing avodah zarah. So then it says, here's what you do: you deal with the idolater. It said, "Lo yumas al pi edecha." Some laws of edus, and then it continues to say, "If you have a ki poli mimcha davar lemishpa ben dam al dam ben yin ladin ben nega lanega," all these things, and says how that it's going to be al pi haTorah asher yarucha, that it everything is to be judged fairly in a court of law. So we have to think about exactly why the section of insults to the avoda were put in the middle of the halachos of din and beis din. Okay, but anyway, number one again is shoftim and shotrim. Number two is the insults to the avoda. Number three is the prosecution of an oved avodah zarah in the court of Jewish law and general rules of the court. Number four, we have the Chumash drawing a contrast between the Kohen, the Levi, and the Shofet versus the Zakein Mamre. It says that the Kohen and the Levi and the Shofet, these are the people that are Mora Halacha, these are the people that are Paskening. You don't listen to a Zakein Mamre. Zakein Mamre, when we talked about leadership, the idea of the leadership theme, the authority theme in Parsha Shoftim, so we just spoke about Shoftim Shotrim, we're going to come back to Shofet right now, and we have Kohen and Levi. They are foiled by the Zakein Mamre. Zakein Mamre, he is anti-establishment. If he actually cared about Ratzon Hashem, he wouldn't say, "Oh, what I'm saying is the MS, and you should listen to me." He would, the Gemara in Horius actually talks about this topic. What if a person knows that everyone else is doing the wrong halacha, everyone, and so then what he's supposed to do is by himself, if he wants to, if he's absolutely certain that this is the halacha is his way, then by himself he should keep the halacha the way he sees fit. But he should not suggest that everyone follow him. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, "Al dan yachidi." You cannot judge by yourself. We also know Achrei Rabim Lahatos. We always go after the Rabim. Therefore, he should not be telling other people to paskin his way. Thus, the Zakein Mamre, who says everybody should paskin the way I'm paskining, he has to be killed. Another theme that I would point out comes up in Shoftim is the concept of Oviyarta Harab Mikirbecha. The dispensation of evil, getting rid of evil, the eradication of evil from your nation. And so you have to know who your leaders are, and you have to know what's the ra that has to be taken away. So whether that means you have an oved avodah zarah, the avodah zarah, he is a foil to a shofet, and Zakein Mamre is a foil to a shofet, and there will be more foils. So we have the Kohen Levi and the Shofet versus the Zakein Mamre. That's section four. Section five is the halachos of the Melech, the greatest authority figure, perhaps, of Klal Yisrael. And we hear about him and his limits, and we hear about how he's very different than a non-Jewish king, just to say the least. All the halachos of a Melech are centered around the idea of Yiras Hashem, how he can be trained to do Yiras Hashem better. He has to write a Sefer Torah special for himself. And he's not allowed to have arrogance. That's why he's not allowed to have so much money. He's not allowed to have too many wives. He's not allowed to have too many horses, and so on and so forth. Number six are various laws pertaining to the Kohanim and the Leviim, with a focus on the Matanas Kahuna and the inheritance and the Matanas Leviya, things that the Kohen and the Levi they inherit. And one question we have to address is why. And we said this in the Parsha Power, why is there a separate section for Kohanim and Leviim and their inheritance and gifts versus the other in section 4 when they're being contrasted from the Zakein Mamre? These two sections should be together, yet Melech is kind of stuck in the middle. And we have 4 is the Kohen, Levi, and the Shofet, 5 is the Melech, and 6 is Kohen and Levi again. So why is it like that? We'll have to discuss. We can suggest an answer. Number 7, we have other abominable practices. These ones are focusing on sorcery, black magic, molech, necromancy, ovenidoni, connecting to the dead, a lot of things that you can't do. And Hashem, really Moshe, since Moshe is the speaker right now, but obviously Al Pi Ratzon Hashem, Moshe contrasts these abominable practices of trying to tell the future and trying to communicate to the dead. He contrasts them from the chosen Navi. Hashem designates a Navi for us. Moshe says Hashem has given you a Navi to contact him with. You do not need to seek out Hashem through necromancy. We know that Shaul HaMelech had done this when he realized the Navi, well, Shmuel wasn't around, and Shaul was having a difficult time figuring out his circumstances with David, and he sought out a Balas Ov. Anyway, Moshe says, you go with the Navi. So the contrast to the Navi is all these abominable practices. We have, so the foil would be a Baal Ov, or a Baal Yadoni, all the sorcerers. These are contrasted. These are anti-establishment. They're anti-Ratzon Hashem. They are not the Navi. And what's interesting is in this section, we have another foil to the Navi, and that is the Navi Sheker. In the same section, Hashem says, so abominable practices, no. Chosen Navi, yes. Then, chosen Navi, yes, but Navi Sheker, no. You have to know how to test the Navi Sheker, or how to test the Navi in general. He has to be able to perform a certain kind of a wonder. But also, it has to be very clear that he's not speaking in the name of an Avodah Zarah. That was already referenced last week's Parsha, Parshas Re'eh. So that is section 7. Abominable practices versus the chosen Navi versus the Navi Sheker. Number 8, we have the cities of refuge. We talk about various murderers. We have unintentional murderers versus premeditated murderers. And the it could be that these sections are a contrast within themselves. But a lot of these halachos are being repeated from Parshas Maaseh. Parshas Maaseh, we had the Ari Miklat and Ratzicha B'Shogeg, and now it's coming up again here. So something that we'll have to talk about, why these halachos are repeated, are they connected to any of the other topics? Number 9 is very, very strange. It's thrown in there in the middle. It's the mitzvah, or really the iser of hasogas gvul, to move the boundary of someone else's land. That is usser. And so that's something that you cannot do. You cannot move the boundary of another person. It's a form of gezel. The mafarshim talk about why you need to have this halacha if there's already a halacha of gezel, and there's a thank you for coming. And so there's a halacha. The mafarshim talk about what's the difference between this halacha and typical gezel. But okay, that's what's discussed in Hasagas Gevul, and we have to address what is this topic doing in here. The Mepharshim talk about it. I saw what I thought is an interesting answer. Ritzshem that I guess that what some of the Mepharshim say. I'll share my humble opinion. That's section 9. Section 10, we have laws of Eidos in terms of Eidim Kesherim versus Eidim Zomamin. So here's another contrast, another foil. These are good Eidim, these are bad Eidim. There are the Eidim that are doing what they're supposed to do. There are Eidim that are plotting evil against someone else. We have to address why we have more laws of Eidus here in section 10 when we had discussed laws of Eidus in section 3. Why are we having two separate sections of laws of Eidus in the courtroom? So we'll have to talk about that. That takes us through the first major part of the Parsha, which is all the different leaders. We talk about one more leader here. There's really going to be more leaders coming up in the next section, but the next section from section 11 till section 14 is its own section. I call it the war series. We have in section 11 the Kohen Meshuach Melchama, who is the Kohen anointed for the purposes of war, and he addresses the entire klal, and talks about the Chozrim Me'orchei HaMelchama. Who are the people who are allowed to return home during war? There are four individuals. There's the person who just got married, or the person who just built a house, the person who just planted a vineyard, or the person who is overly afraid, whether it's because of his averos, whether it's because he's just afraid in general. But section 11 is the intro to war. We have a few introductory sections to war. So here's the first one, the Chozer Me'orchei HaMelchama and the pep talk of the Kohen Meshuach Melchama and the Shotrim. So it could be we have a little bit of a contrast here as well. We have the Kohen Meshuach Melchama and the Shotrim on the one hand, and then we have the people who have to go home. Number 12, we have another introductory law to war, the concept of She'elas Shalom. Here it does not mean a greeting, but here it literally means an offering of peace. You offer it in the case of a Milchamas Rishus, not a Milchamas Mitzvah. But in a Milchamas Rishus, we offer Shalom. We don't have to go to war. Milchamas Rishus is usually just a war with the intention of expanding the land of Eretz Yisrael. When it comes to the Milchamas Mitzvah, the contrast there is lo sechaya kol neshama. That's what we assume, that you cannot let a single neshama live. Of course, if there's a desire for geiros and teshuva, we allow them to do that. Rashi says that explicitly. But we have again the offering of shalom, and we contrast nations who have potential versus nations who are ovdim avodah zarah, who do not intend on turning back from it. If they do, it would be another story. But that's one another sense of contrast. Another idea. This is taught in the context of war. When you're doing a siege, number 13, we have the Isser of Bal Tashchis. When you're doing war, when you're doing a siege, you're not allowed to destroy the fruit trees. And so the sparing of the fruit trees is another part of the war section. Number 14, which finishes off our parsha, which I addressed in the parsha preview, is the case of Egla Arufa. Very strange that it's here, because Egla Arufa doesn't seem to have much to do with war. It's a case of a mystery murder. And since it's a case of a mystery murder, the Mefarshim seem to assume that it has nothing to do with war itself. Just one second, sorry. Hey, sorry about that. But when it comes to Egla Arufa, the idea is that this did not happen in the circumstance of war. I think if it happened during a war, we would assume that he was just a casualty of war. So the idea that Egla Arufa is stuck in here is a question that we have to address. We're not going to address, again, why Kiseitze is cut off, but we're going to talk a little bit about why Egla Arufa is relevant to this discussion. So Mir Tzashem, we will get to that. But with that, we could actually start talking about some of the topics. But before we do, I'm just going to list the topics again. Number one was the Shoftim and the Shochrim. Number two is the insults to the Avoda. Number three is the prosecution of an Oved Avoda Zara, an idolater, and the general rules of the court. Number four is the contrast between the Kohei and Levi and Shofet as Morim Halacha, they Paskin, versus the Zakin Mamre. Number five is the Melech. Number six is the laws of the perks of the Kohanim and the Levium. What exactly they inherit? What are the gifts that they are due or that are due to them? Number seven is the abominable practices of sorcery and black magic, moloch and necromancy, all of those versus the chosen Navi as a source of communication with Hashem, and the Navi as a source of communication to Hashem versus the Navi Sheker. Number eight is the cities of refuge, talking about the different kinds of murderers, unintentional and premeditated. Number nine is Hasagas Gavul, the Isser of moving the boundary of another person. Number 10 is the laws of Eidos in terms of Eidim Ksheirim versus Eidim Zomimin. With that we start the war series. Number 11 talks about the Kohen Mashiach Machama and the Chozrim Me'archei HaMachama, the Kohen who gives the pep talk, and the people who return home from war. Number 12 is She'elas Shalom, the offering of peace, the difference between a Milchamas Rishus and the Milchamas Mitzvah. Number 13 is the Isser of Bal Tashchis, destroying the fruit trees during the war. Number 14, and finally, is the case of Egla Arufa, the mystery murder, and the ritual that's done where they decapitate the calf, and they create a source of atonement for the person who died. Okay, so let's talk about some of the questions. So the first question that I was addressing was, how come in the halachos of the courtroom and the shoftim we have this insertion of what I refer to as the insults to the avoda, planting an asherah next to the mizbeach, or erecting a matzeva, which Hashem doesn't like, or giving a toeva as a karbon, whether it's a blemished animal or whether it is it offered with the wrong intention and therefore is pigel. So why are these things stuck in the middle of all of the halachos pertaining to the courtroom? So I heard that the Kli Yakar has an elaborate answer that I did not see, but just a couple of things to point out. There's a midrash that says that the appointment of a corrupt shofet is tantamount to planting an asherah next to the mizbeach. And I think that's very telling, because it shows you the power of the importance that Hashem ascribes to the concept of justice in terms of social justice, not like contemporary social justice, but justice between people, injustice in a courtroom, in a court of law, and dine mamonos. And you might think that Hashem doesn't deem these things as important as the spiritual, ritual, religious laws. You might think that. And yet, Hashem says, don't put an asherah in the mizbeach, next to the mizbeach, and similarly, don't put a corrupt shofet in the courtroom. Hashem deems these as important. Hashem does not, for most intents and purposes, Hashem does not differentiate between synagogue and state. The idea that what happens in the mikdash versus what happens in Beis Din, all of these things are important. Hashem does not approve of injustice anywhere. I would take it a step further. That the if you look at what Hashem says, or what Moshe, I should say, says about the judge, it says you can't have favoritism, you can't take shochad. And the Chumash very interestingly tells us why you can't take shochad. Ki ha-shochad ya'aver enei chachamim v'salev devrei tzadikim. Because a shochad blinds people. And it's very interesting. We don't have the Chumash telling us for every single aver and every single mitzvah why that mitzvah is obligated on you, why that avera is prohibited to you. Just, you know, it should be sufficient for the Chumash just to tell us the Isser. Yet, Moshe Rabbeinu, he borrows this lashon about shochad from Parshas Mishpatim. We had this lashon before, that a shochad blinds people. The Chumash shouldn't have to say it. Just say it's forbidden, it's prohibited. But the idea is the fact that the Chumash tells us the reason for it, it's actually preemptively dispelling any rationale otherwise. In other words, it's going to blind you no matter what. It's an inescapable reality that you will now have a biased judgment, and therefore you cannot do it. And it's interesting, the person who's going to take a shochad and say, oh no, it's going to be okay, we are already saying that he is already blinded. And therefore, if he's blinded, you can do things, we can get you to do things that are completely absurd, because you've now rationalized that it's okay because you took a shochad. And a question you can ask is, why would a person think that it's okay to plant an asherah next to the mizbeach, an asherah that was served as a vodah zarah? Why would you think you need to put up a matzeva? The pasuk says, asher sanei Hashem lekecha, which Hashem hates. And what would be the point of bringing a carbon that's a toeva? Why would you, we said it's counterproductive to do a service to Hashem that's actually a disservice. But if you are taking a shochad and you are putting injustice in the place of justice, it's complete opposite. Just like it's absurd to bring a korban that's the toeva, or absurd to serve Hashem using an object of avodah zarah, it's absurd to put a person who is unjust, a person who's corrupt, in the justice system. And a person who is corrupted like that, who would be willing to accept a shochad, you know, the Yetzer Hara has no bounds. If there's anything that you can gain, you can rationalize putting an asherah next to the mizbeach. You could rationalize bringing a toeva as a karbon and using objects of avodah zarah in your service of Hashem. And, in more modern ways that has been done. So more modern than the ancient avodah zarah that the Chumash is talking about right here. Now, that will sort of begin to explain to us why this is in the middle of the laws of courtroom. It shows that Hashem, again, does not differentiate between synagogue and state. He doesn't differentiate, and maybe they're halachic differentiations, but spiritual fundamental differentiations there are not between injustice and sacrilegiousness. Okay. We'll come back to the question why there are two separate sections of Eidos in our Parsha. I'll address that when we get up to that section. The second section talks about it. Why are the two separate sections talking about the role of the Kohen and the Levi? We have in section 4, the Kohen, the Levi, and the Shofet. And in section number 6, we have the laws of the Kohen and the Levi in terms of the inheritance and the gifts. So I'd say, I didn't see this answer anywhere, I didn't see anything in the Mefarshim, but I think the idea is, before, in section number 4, we were discussing the Kohanim and Levim in their facet as Morim, in their facet as teachers of Halacha, as Shoftim, as Poskim, here we are looking at their facet as Hashem's holy messengers on behalf of Klal Yisrael, their entitlements to gifts. And just like we started off saying that a shofet cannot accept a shochad, so it could be we have, in terms of the Kohanim and the Leviim, they are separated by the Melech, that we have, on the one hand, it talks about their role as poskim, and then a couple of sections later, it talks about the gifts that you have to give them. Maybe the Chumash didn't want to put those sections next to each other, so as to give off the impression that maybe through Matanas Kuhuna, Matanas Leviya, you can give a shochad to a Kohen or a Levi who is being Mora Halacha for you. In the ancient times, again, a Kohen and a Levi, they were not just people who had entitlements, but they were actually, and people who worked in the Mikdash, but they were people who were Mora Halacha. They were people who knew Halacha better than anyone else. They were like the of their time, they were the poskim, along with the shoftim, who were not necessarily Kohanim and Leviim. But again, we have one separate section for their facet as teachers of Halacha and poskim, and a separate section for the gifts that they are entitled to, which is completely not connected. Okay. Cities of Refuge and the Murderers. So this comes after the abominable practices, Chosen Navi versus the Navi Sheker. So in terms of why the halacha of the Ari Miklat is repeated, one thing that I would mention is that the Chumash talks about a very interesting scenario in which we know that there are six Ari Miklat, three in Eretz Yisrael, three in the lands of Sichon and Og. But the Chumash gives a possibility that says if the land of Eretz Yisrael is expanded, so Moshe Rabbeinu says you should make more Ari Miklat. And I think they say there the Chumash talks about nine Ari Miklat. The Ari Miklat before Moshe Rabbeinu died, the Ari Miklat when they would enter Eretz Yisrael, so there was three and three, and there would be three more La'asid Lavo, said Rashi. It's very fascinating. So it's repeated perhaps because there's a new halacha being taught here. But why is it relevant? Is another question. So I think if you notice the connection between this section and the section of the Navi, the Naviim, the Navi Sheker, Navi Emes, Navi Kasher, or Navi Asher Hashem Yivchar, the one connection, it goes back to a theme that I mentioned earlier. One of the themes in Shoftim is V'yaharta Rabbi Kerbecha, that you have to rid evil from your midst. And because of that halacha, you have to get rid of a Zaken Mamre. Because of that halacha, you have to get rid of Navi Sheker. It says Lo Sagur Menu. Do not fear the Navi Sheker. Do not tremble because of him. But not only that, we also have the halachos when it comes to a murderer. It says Lo Sachos Enecha. You shouldn't pity him. The Chumash is telling us how to expunge all evil. You don't eradicate. People who are just unintentional murderers. It's an unfortunate situation. They do have to go to Gullus. But is there room for pity for this individual? Of course there is. You have to know how to discern between people who deserve our respect, deserve our love, deserve our fear, deserve our pity, versus those who do not. So like a Mesis, like we spoke about last week, a missionary, he does not get mercy. A Zaken Mamre does not get mercy. Adam Zomerman do not get mercy. An intentional murderer does not get mercy. No Veda Vodazara does not get mercy. But not an intentional murderer, we have room for mercy for him. The next section was Hasagas Gvul. The question was, why in the world are we talking about Hasagas Gvul? It seems to just be thrown in there randomly. So the Ibn Ezra talks about the progression in terms of halachos of murder and halachos of Dine Mamonos. Ibn Ezra says, if you, fights concerning boundaries and concerning Dine Mamonos, they can lead to murder. And that's the Ibn Ezra's very pashut, simplistic answer, which I don't think is a complete answer. So we have to, I think, work a little bit harder to see what the fundamental connection is. The Baal HaTurim gives two suggestions of what the connection might be between Hasagas Gvul and the halachos that we just talked about of Arotzeach. So he gives two connections. One, he says, even of Arotzeach, you're not allowed to move his Gvul. You're not allowed to move the boundary to take land away from him. And the Baal HaTurim also suggests that this is a limitation on Beis Din, that Beis Din is not allowed to expand their own borders if it's going to take someone else's land. So a suggestion that I wanted to make is, if you look, the pasuk about Hasagas Gvul appears in Yud Tes Yud Aleph, 1914. if you look in the previous section talking about the Ari Miklat, so in Yud Tes Ches in 19:8, if you look, there's a connection between the two sections. They both talk about Gvul, and they talk about boundaries. Here we're talking about Hasagas Gvul, moving the boundary of your friend. In the previous section, it talked about Harchava, an expansion of the boundaries, Harchavas Gvul. When the Gvul is going to be expanded, says the Chumash, then you can make more Ari Miklat. I think this pasuk over here about Hasagas Gvul is a limitation on that. It says that that you can expand the land for purposes, for positive purposes of expanding Eretz Yisrael, and all of that's fine. And that's actually a topic that comes up with Melchamas Rishus, which we mentioned earlier. That you can do, but to remove a boundary stam and to infiltrate someone else's domain, that you cannot do. So Hasagas Gvul is related to the concept of Harchavas Gvul, which was discussed in the Ari Miklat section. Now, in terms of the laws of Eidos, Eidim Ksherim and Eidim Zomimin, why is section 10 separate from section 3, which was also talking about the rules of the court? So I saw the Balaturim says very simply that there, we were talking about Dinei Nefashos. Here we're more or less focusing on Dinei Mamonos. Now, Eidim Zomimin do have relevance to Dinei Nefashos as well, but more or less, we are focusing on Dinei Mamonos, and the Netziv seems to make a similar suggestion. I didn't see the Netziv inside. However, I saw an article, and the article came from weeklyshtickle.com, and this was an essay written by Eliezer Bulka. I have no idea who Eliezer Bulka is, but he quotes the Netziv, and he mentions a contrast between, if you look in the earlier section, which section is which? Let me see. In the earlier section, the Chumash mentioned Alpi Shnayim Edim. Our section here says Alpi Shnei Edim. I know Rav Sachs has a shir where he talks about the difference, it makes it as a diuk, the difference between Shnayim Edim versus Shnei Edim. But just the way the Netziv explains it might be connected, is that Shnei means two identical objects. For example, the Se'irim la Hashem, the Se'irim la Azazel, it says Shnei Se'irim. Shnei means two things that are identical. But Shnayim doesn't mean two, but Shnayim Edim really means a pair of Edim. And why is this relevant? So in the Weekly Shtickle, they quote the Yerushalmi Sanhedrin, which is brought in the Rush. It says that if two witnesses give absolutely identical testimony, they must be checked out because it's suspicious, and apparently the grub would disqualify witnesses that gave absolutely identical testimony, and based on a Mishnah and Sanhedrin. So this article continues. It says, with regards to capital cases, Dinei Nefashos, since there's a requirement to deeply investigate the witnesses through Drisha and Chakira, it says Shnayim, because identical testimony would not be accepted. But in monetary matters, Dinei Mamonos, where there's no requirement of Drisha and Chakira, it says Shnei, because they are allowed to be identical. So the Chumash is now differentiating between Dinei Nefashos and Dinei Mamonos. And it works out really well, because the Sagas Gvul is Dinei Mamonos. Ritzicha and everything that we've been talking about till now, the sorcery, the Avodah Zarah, all the time, and then Avi Sheker, everything that we've been focusing on until now was all related to Nefashos. Now we're starting to focus more on Mamonos. So that takes us through Hasagas Gvul and the laws of Eidos. Finally, when we get to the war series, and this is the last topic that we're going to discuss right now, why is the war series interrupted by Egla Arufa? So the Baal HaTurim, again, he gives three different connections between the Halachas of War and Egla Arufa, or three different associations you might make. He talks about how a body found... he says that you shouldn't put two Jews at war together if you know that they don't like each other, because it might result in a mystery murder case, which we would not be able to ascertain because it would be during war, and we wouldn't know better. We would assume it's a casualty of war, and Egla Rufa would not be properly able to be observed because, again, we would think it's a casualty of war. So he says, don't put two people next to each other in war that you know don't like each other. Another suggestion that the Baal HaTorah makes is that he says, if you're about to go to a milchama, but you have an Egla Arufa case to tend to, which one do you do first? He says you should do the Egla Arufa case. And I want to just drop the anchor here just to talk a little bit about how I understand that answer in the Baal HaTorah, that Egla Arufa precedes all the halachas of war. Or at least that it's stuck in the middle of all the halachas of war to give us context to war. And that is, in the larger scheme of the halachas of war, the Chumash wants us to understand the Torah's value of life. The whole concept of Egla Arufa is that we don't take a casualty in a casual way. We don't make casual of a casualty. That if there's someone who's dead, if someone who dies, if we don't know who killed them, that doesn't mean we could just ignore it. There's a ritual that has to be done by the Zakenim and the Shoftim of the nearest town. There has to be an atonement. They have to, they have to kill a calf. The calf represents the life that was lost, the life that was unfinished, because again, he was murdered, and it's a young calf. He doesn't, and a calf that has not done any work, because this life that has been taken, he did not get to complete his work. They go to a land that has to be left infertile, Nachal Eson. Why? The infertility represents the sterilization of this person's life. That this man, whatever he had accomplished, that's it. He's not accomplishing anything more. You know, why? Because his life was cut short by a filthy murderer. The Chumash wants us to know before that if you want to go into war, you have to understand the value of life. War is not for people who are callous and wild men. This is why I believe the Chumash inserts the halacha of Baal Tashchis in the middle of war. Do you think just because you're at war, that means that you're allowed to destroy trees now? Just because you want to steamroll everything in your path? You can't just do that. That's why we offer shalom. And that's why, even though the Chumash says lo sechaya kol neshama, the Chumash does not even openly say that you have to kill every man, woman, and child. It says that you shouldn't let the neshama live. And why? Because the Chumash is not about violence, it's not about aggression. I would say, all of the Torah's ways are ways of peace, even the halachos that we don't understand, even the halachos that seem aggressive, even the halachos that seem inhumane. All of the halachos of war, the Chumash wants us to know, if you want to go into a war, you are not actually able to go to war if you do not understand the value of a human life. And Egla Arufa says that a human life is valuable. And with that, we'll finish today. But Mitzvah Hashem, we will next week. We're going to talk a little bit about why Kisetze was left off. But that takes us through Parsha Shoftim, Baruch Hashem. There's a lot of depth to Parsha Shoftim. There's a lot more to be ma'ayin in. But in the meantime, the sections of the Parsha are number one, the Shoftim and the Shoftim. Number two, the insults to Avoda, Masheros, Matzevos, and Toevos as Karbanos. Number three is prosecuting an Oved Avoda Zara and general rules of Eidos and Beis Din. Number four is the Kohen, Levi, and Shofet as Poskim versus the Zakein Mamre. Number five is the Melech. Number six is the laws of the Kohanim and Levim, the inheritance and their gifts that they're entitled to. Number seven is the abominable practices from sorcery, black magic, moloch, necromancy, versus the Navi Sheker. Number eight is the Arya Miklat, cities of refuge, and different kinds of murderers, unintentional, premeditated, / intentional murderer. Number nine is Hasagas Gvul. Number ten is laws of Eidos in terms of Edom Ksherim versus Edom Zomin and the focus on Dine Mamunas. And the war series is 11 through 14. First, the Kohen Meshach Melchama and the Chozer Me'orchel Melchama. Number 12 is the offering She'elas Shalom in Melchamas Rishos versus Melchamas Mitzvah, where the Chumash says, Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama, the seven Kenani nations. Number 13 is Baal Tashchis, spare the fruit trees. Number 14 is Egla Arufa. Everybody have a wonderful Shabbos. And again, this was in Schus Lili Nishmas, my grandfather Moshe Ben Yosef.